logical clock, you know, turned to 10 o'clock and they got quiet. I think mostly lecture. Feel free to raise your hand at any point. I'll call on you, Vanessa. I went back and forth. I figured for these auditorium sessions it might just be easier. I'm a preacher, so yeah, I have a lot I think I want to say. So, I'm going to... Okay, until midnight, until someone falls out the window, right? That's all right. Okay, well, I have... The doors are closing, the mic's on, and I have time markers written in my outline to hit, or in theory hit. So we're going to go ahead and get started. We're talking about social media in this session this morning. My guess is that many of you in here use some form of social media, or you have kids that, and grandkids or grandkids that you're thinking about how to train them, instruct them in the principles surrounding social media. So hopefully this will be helpful to you. I want to start with something you may or may not recognize. Let's see, is there a way to this? Oh, there it is. I'm not seeing it on the back screen, if that's someone can help me with that. Thank you. So I actually want to back up here then. I don't know if you've heard of the metaverse. I don't know if this seems... Oh, good. I've got some hand raising here. Yeah, the metaverse is something that may or may not become a normal reality in the future. But last year, Mark Zuckerberg, who is the founder, CEO of Facebook and Instagram, made a big announcement that their company was going to shift its primary focus to the metaverse, which is, if you're like me and ignorant on these sorts of things, a 3D virtual world that people would inhabit by using maybe a set of virtual reality goggles or maybe even a pair of glasses at some point. But the way this works is that you would have an avatar. So this is kind of the picture of yourself, the image of yourself. It could look like you, or you could be a three-headed green alien, right? But you inhabit this virtual reality world. Zuckerberg said in his announcement, this is the next platform and medium that will be even more immersive. It will be an embodied internet experience in which you are in the experience, not just looking at it. Okay. So you would have a space that you would call your home. Again, look like whatever you want it to look like. You travel around in this virtual world and see things, do things, concerts, classes, maybe even kind of cross over into the physical realm. If you can imagine your coworker popping up as a hologram in your meeting, right? That sort of thing. But Zuckerberg says it's the feeling of presence. This is the defining quality of the metaverse. You're going to really feel like you are there with other people. Notice what he's saying about this is embodied. You're going to feel the presence in this metaverse. Okay? These sorts of things have been popular before. I don't know if any of you guys played RuneScape. You know, I remember being on RuneScape a little while when I was a kid. Second Life was a real big deal for a while. But that's the sort of idea where you get into this virtual world. You are in the virtual world. I think, if we're honest, that sort of thing appeals to us. I can think of a couple reasons. Maybe you can think of more. One would be that it really is the connection, right? You get into this virtual world and you are talking with and interacting with people that are, you know, miles and miles away, countries, continents away. We like that ability to connect with people so readily. It's also somewhat of an escape, right? In these virtual worlds, you can create the reality for yourself, right? We like that ability to imagine the way we want life to be and then to create that. But here's some of the things that Zuckerberg said as he was explaining his the focus on the metaverse. He said that our company, Facebook and Instagram, focuses on connecting people. One of the reasons I started Facebook was that at the time you could use the internet to find almost anything except the thing that matters most of all, people. The metaverse, he says, is the next frontier. He said it was always clear that the dream was to feel present with those that we care about. Again, that idea of being present. He says, isn't that the promise of technology? To be together with anyone, to be able to teleport anywhere, to create, experience anything. He says this is, together we can finally put people at the center of our technology, deliver an experience where we are present with each other. There will be opportunities, he says, for connection, for creation, for learning, for joy. This is a future where with just a pair of glasses, you'll be able to step beyond this physical world and into the experiences that we've talked about today. I'm proud of what we've built so far, Zuckerberg says, and excited about what comes next as we move beyond the constraints of screens, beyond the limits and distance of physics, and toward a future where everyone can be present together. Okay, so I don't know if the metaverse is going to pan out and be our new reality, as the advertisement says, but I want you to see in Zuckerberg's words that what he sees is that the metaverse is simply the extension of what already exists with social media now. And that's one of the reasons why I highlight what Zuckerberg is saying, is because your use of social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, these are virtual worlds in their own way. That when you use these social media platforms, you're stepping out of the real world, we might say, into a virtual world in which you are inhabiting and moving around and interacting with other people. And I would say that thinking in this mode, there's also lessons that we'll learn, I think, today in any kind of digital communication. So Zoom, FaceTime, texting, email, and so on. So we inhabit these virtual worlds via social media and digital communication. And the question I want us to ask this morning is, is our time in these virtual worlds benefiting us and benefiting others? I love this this twice stated statement of Paul in the book of 1 Corinthians, where he says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are profitable. Now, we should note that Paul is not actually saying that the Christian can do anything they want and it's lawful. But Paul is instead kind of granting the Corinthians that point, saying even if something is lawful, even if you can say there's no law against this, there's more questions that we need to be asking than simply, is it right or wrong? We need to be asking questions like, is it profitable? Is it good for me? And that's just a point for us as maturing Christians that we need to go beyond asking, is it a sin too? Often we ask that question, and if the answer is no, then it's a green light. No, we need to ask, is it profitable? Is it wise? Is it beneficial? And particularly in chapter 10, in the discussion about eating meat sacrificed to idols, Paul says this again and says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. Not all things build up. That's what that word means. And so, this is the question that I want us to ask this morning. Assuming that our use of social media and digital communication is lawful, is my use of it building others up? Is it building me up and growing me closer to other people in an edifying way? That's the question, the basic question that we want to reflect on with our time together this morning. Here's how we'll do that. We're going to talk about social media, what its purpose is, what its purpose was in the beginning, and whether it's accomplishing that purpose or not. Then we're going to spend some time talking about some of the inherent problems with social media, and then talk about what is the solution, or at least what are some of the solutions. Let's start by talking about the purpose of social media. Remember the words of Zuckerberg from just a few minutes ago, that Facebook and these other platforms were created to connect people, to be present with other people that you couldn't be with, to find people and to be together with them via social media. And I would ask you with me to consider some of the ways that we benefit so greatly from this connection that's provided by social media and digital communication. Right before we walked out of the house this morning, Dr. Crispell showed me that video of his grandson Parker taking his first steps. I mean, what an amazing thing, right? And it's the same with our 2.5-year-old son, Asher, that he can see his papa, that he can see his Paw and Mimi on FaceTime, and that we can share these special moments with those that we love. And Facebook is often, and Instagram are used in very much the same way. A lot of grandparents in here that see those pictures of grandkids and benefit so greatly from maintaining that connection. Another benefit, one person told me after one of these lessons, you know, there are people on Facebook and Instagram that I've never met in person, but I got connected with them following them on social media, and they are so encouraging. The posts that they make really help me and build me up. That's an opportunity that was created by social media that's a benefit, that's an encouragement. I was just talking with Dave a few minutes ago about Hurricane Harvey that we experienced in Houston 5 years ago now. And it was amazing to see the way that social media, Facebook in particular, allowed us to stay connected with each other and find out who needs help and who can we serve in this difficult time. And of course, COVID-19 has showed us that very thing as well, that we've used some of these tools to stay connected in a time when we're not able to physically be present. We can pray for those who are in urgent need all across the country. Facebook tributes to people that have passed away. I know when my mom died 9 years ago, the tributes on Facebook were just amazing to see. Some of those were even read at her memorial service. We're able to give honor to people via social media in a way that, again, wasn't possible before. So on and so on we could go. With the benefits, the blessings that social media has provided for us with its connection. And I will say, and I want you to hear me say, thank God for these blessings. I do think that social media is one of the ways that we fulfill passages like Ephesians 4 and verse 16, where Paul says that the whole body is fitted and held together by what every joint supplies according to the proper working of each individual part, causing the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. Okay, I said it. Did everybody hear me say it? All right. But, and here's the but. It's true that since the invention and universal adoption of these social media platforms like Facebook, there is more and more evidence that social media is having the opposite effect of what it was intended originally. One of the really fascinating things about this whole topic is that more and more tech executives and the people that created this stuff to begin with are saying there's real problems and dangers with these sorts of things, and they actually put stricter limitations on their own children with these tools and devices than we do often, even as Christians. So a couple examples of that. Tim Cook, the current CEO of Apple, he's quoted as saying in a 2018 talk, "I don't have a kid, but I have a nephew that I put some boundaries on. There's some things I won't allow. I don't want him on a social network," the CEO of Apple says. There's another talk you can find, although the language is pretty horrible in it, but Kamath Palihapitiya is a former executive at Facebook and Instagram. This is what he says about those platforms. He says, "These platforms like Facebook and Instagram are literally at a point now where we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. It is eroding the core foundations of how people behave by and between each other. And I don't have a good solution," he says. "My solution is that I just don't use these tools anymore." And he goes on to say he doesn't allow his kids to use these tools either. By the way, before I forget, I don't know where they are, but we printed out a handout that has a list of resources that I have either used in developing this material or would recommend. Books, articles, some videos, both from a biblical perspective and even some of these people from a secular perspective talking about this topic. So hopefully that can appear in the next 40 minutes or 30 minutes. And are they on the back table? Okay, so grab one on your way out. And I'm going to try to have these with me at each of the sessions for anybody that wants to pick these up. Okay, so tech executives are saying that these social media platforms are a problem in our society. But it's not just at a societal level. It's at a personal level. Okay, there's an NPR article from 2017. It's called "Feeling Lonely? Too Much Time on Social Media May Be Why." The quote from that article: "Young adults, especially, social media may not be so social after all. Among people in that age group, they say heavy use of platforms such as Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram were associated with feelings of social isolation." There's a great book called iGen. It was written in 2017 by Gene Twenge. And she is talking about this generation of people born between 1995 and 2012. And she's able not only to correlate high levels of social media and device use with anxiety, depression, even suicidal thoughts, but more than that, show that there's a causation effect here, right? That these this time on social media is actually a cause of these mental health concerns. But I want to say, in some ways, I'm glad this is not being restricted to teens and young adults. This is not just a problem for young people. I think any of us, we're honest with ourselves, we see the same effect in our own lives. That the more time we're on Facebook, the more time we're on Instagram, it's not making us feel any more connected to other people in the long run. In fact, we feel more isolated. This is really the simple version of my story when it comes to social media. I was on Facebook. I'd graduated college and was moving away from Tampa, where I had a lot of friends and close connections. I was living in the wild frontier of Oklahoma. I didn't know very many people. I thought Facebook was going to be for me a way to maintain those connections and continue to have that support system. It was the opposite. I remember nights just scrolling through Facebook in this lonely isolation of Oklahoma. By the way, living in Oklahoma was great. Great people there. It was wonderful. But at first it was hard. Okay. And just scrolling through Facebook, surely there's going to be something on here that gets me built up and connects me to somebody, and just like emptiness and emptiness into the deep, dark despair of the mindless scroll that was doing nothing for me. So it was making me more lonely, and I got off. And again, I would imagine that to some extent you've experienced this same thing yourself. So why would be the question? What are the problems with social media? And why are we experiencing the opposite effect of what is intended? Again, I think there are lots of things we could say, but I'll share with you four inherent problems with social media that we, I think, would do well to reflect on. One is that social media tends toward self-promotion. I mean, at its basic level, what is a social media platform like Facebook or Twitter? You have an account, or I have an account, and what do you do with it? I post on it what I want to say. I post pictures of my life. Here's me. Here's who I am. Do you like me? Is always the question being asked. We probably have a problem of self-expression being too much of a priority in our society anyway, but social media is just such a natural forum for self-expression. And we know, especially as Christians, we know that just simply expressing oneself and sharing oneself is not the most conducive approach for building relationship. In fact, it's actually contrary to the basic principles of social interaction. We know that good conversation, good relationship building involves much more than just proclaiming my opinion or sharing about myself. Proverbs 18:2, a fool does not delight in understanding, but only in revealing his own mind. And that could be a tagline for Facebook or Twitter. And unfortunately, social media makes this far too easy and doesn't encourage us necessarily to build relationship, true relationship. But there's another level to this. Because social media platforms are me sharing myself, it is just natural for all of us to want to make ourselves look as good as possible, right? And so we shape an image of ourselves on social media that we think is attractive. Remember those avatars from the metaverse? You know, you go in and you create the person, how you want to look to the world. On a certain level, that's what we're doing on social media, is it not? We are crafting an image of me and my life and who I am, who I want to present to the world. In fact, it's easier, like in these virtual reality worlds like Second Life, it's easier to be who we want to be online. It's easier for me on Facebook to be smart and witty and have a quote for everything and to be beautiful on Instagram. It's easier to do that than it is to be in real life. But the problem is it's not really us. And one of the problems is that as we're creating this persona online that isn't me, I know it's not me. And all it does is just makes me more insecure and self-conscious because I know I'm pretending. And I know I'm putting something up that is not really real, not really me. But this is one of the problems that social media tends so easily towards self-promotion, self-marketing, you might even say. And because of that, it fuels these unhealthy comparisons that we make. So here's the thing. I'm not the only one out there crafting an image of myself that is so beautiful and funny and smart to the world. Everybody else is doing that too. And so what happens is that I start comparing myself to other people who look like their lives are wonderful and happy and perfect, and their kids are the most beautiful and their vacations are the best. But I know my life isn't like that. And so I get depressed. And natural response in our depression is to just do what is easiest, do what feels good, and that often is just spending more time on social media. And so it's a problem. According to Twenge, the author of that book, iGen, I mentioned, social media negatively affects, via her research, negatively affects the mental health of girls much more than it does boys. And you can imagine why that is, or know intuitively why that is. And I think it's because of this comparative nature of social media. Girls that are conscious of their appearance see everyone on Instagram that's prettier than them. Young women who are conscious of their weight see all these people that are more fit than them. And young women that are lonely see all these pictures of happy couples and happy families. And that's really hard to deal with. And again, adds to that that anxiety, that depression. But again, I would say I don't think it's just young women. I do think women in general, young and old, struggle with this more than men do. So I do think it's a particular problem. And let's see if I can say this carefully here. I do think, related to this, the whole, what do you call it? The model, the business model, the relationship now that's been created on social media of the influencer, okay? I think that this is a problem in this regard, right? I don't know if I know exactly what an influencer is, except for it's someone that has a lot of follows on social media, and so I guess, companies will, give them products to then sell, via social media by saying, hey, I use this hair product, I use this cleaning product, whatever it is. And so influencers on social media are essentially selling themselves. They're selling their life. They're marketing their life and the products that they use and the things that they do. But oftentimes these are people we know, or at least we feel like we know them because we follow them on social media. And so it's usually women that are the influencers and the ones following. And they see these influencers, they say, well, my life needs to be like that. I need to have those products. I need to look like that. And again, this just is an unhealthy, unrealistic, is what I want to emphasize, unrealistic comparison and expectation developed by this culture of social media. Again, I think the influencer model is kind of one clear example of that. But in some ways, that principle is just true when we are looking at anyone's life that looks better than my life. But we're all just marketing ourselves and comparing ourselves to each other. But this is the point I want to make. Much of what we're seeing on social media is at best selective, likely edited, polished, or made up even, in some cases, to paint a particular image of that person. But it fuels this natural tendency to compare. Ecclesiastes 4:4, then I saw that all toil and all skill and work came from a man's envy of his neighbor. This also is vanity and striving after wind. We might say that I saw that every Instagram post comes from a woman's envy of her neighbor. This also is vanity and striving after the wind. Okay. So social media tends towards self-promotion. Because of that, it fuels these unhealthy comparisons. The third thing I'll say is that social media exhausts us with over-connection. It exhausts us with over-connection. When we spend time regularly on social media, we are bombarded with the latest news and problems and celebrations of the lives of hundreds of people. It's really quite astounding how much we see, even in a short time, on social media. We are just inundated. You could see a cancer diagnosis, a new baby, a lament on infertility, a humanitarian crisis, the death of a child, all within 5 minutes of scrolling through your Facebook feed. Here's what I want to tell you this morning, suggest to you. We were not created to handle all of this. We were not made to handle all of this. It is too much for us. We were not made to bear the burdens of all of humanity all over the world. There's only one who can do that. It's not us. We are not God. We cannot be in all these places at once. We cannot bear up under the weight of so much pain, so much heartache. And really, there's not anything I can do about all the brokenness that I see in my field of vision, magnified to me on a daily basis on social media. Now, someone might ask, well, what about praying for all these people and all these problems that I see on Facebook? First thing I would say is that I do not mean at all to discourage anyone from requesting prayers from the largest possible audience that is available to you. I want to encourage that. And again, social media is a great way to do that. Second thing I would say is that we should be praying, of course, praying for people. And it's commendable to pray for the things that we hear about via social media, even if it's not directly related to us or near us. But third, I would say we have limits. We can't actually pray for all the problems that are out there. Paul tells us to weep with those who weep, rejoice with those who rejoice. I can't actually rejoice with all the people rejoicing on social media and weep with all the people that are weeping on social media. I can't do that. And here's the thing, without social media, we already have a lot of people to worry about, don't we? I mean, I think a place like this, if you're at Temple Terrace or another larger congregation, there are hundreds of people in your immediate family that themselves have their problems, their difficulties, their tragedies, their celebrations. We can be with these people. We can sit with them. We can weep with them. We can pray with them. But I think what happens is that we're on social media and this constant exposure to so many problems. Have you ever felt this? It makes us numb to it all. We just become exhausted with all this exposure to how awful things are out there, all the horrible things going on, and it actually leaves us exhausted and empty and unequipped to help the people that are right in front of us and that we could be a blessing to in the flesh. I think this is a real problem, something we need to think about. The over-connection that is happening to us on social media and what it's doing to us. And then maybe related to that, I would say that social media distracts us from flesh and blood. Think back to that metaverse. And I'm sure a lot of us, if not all of us, kind of smirk at that idea of the metaverse and say, you know, Zuckerberg says you're really going to be there and it's going to be like you're embodied and all this stuff. We know that's not true. We know that a virtual reality can never be what the real thing is. And that's true of social media as well. Even at its best, it's still a virtual community. It's made up of written text, photos, videos that are taken in through a screen. It's not real life, we would say. I love 2 John 12. He says at the end of that short little letter, I have many things to write to you. I don't want to do it with paper and ink, but I hope to come to you and speak face to face so that your joy may be full. See the connection there? Fullness of joy when I see you face to face. And we can have these conversations in person. That was true 2,000 years ago. It's still true today. When we spend more and more of our time in the world of virtual relationship, we're actually separating ourselves from, again, from real life, we might say, and from the power of living as flesh and blood humans that God created us to be. And there's a twofold effect here. Not only are we missing out on a better life, okay, but we're diminishing the life that we currently have. The top resource on the handout is the one book, if you had to read one book, 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You by Tony Ranke. It is from a biblical perspective and it's very helpful. But in this section on taking away from flesh and blood, Ranke highlights the epidemic of texting while driving. That's the clearest example you can think of and the most, you know, kind of alarming example. When we're texting while driving, we've all had this experience. We can all admit it. We've all had this experience. We are literally I don't say that the way the kids do, you know. I was literally out on a limb, you know. We are literally putting the lives of flesh and blood humans on the road in danger of killing them instantly. For a few, you know, for one more message to somebody that's in a separate place via text or an email. Or maybe doing something else. Checking, you know, our Facebook feed or playing chess virtually or something like that. But this principle holds true in even what we think of as innocuous situations. When I'm texting during a meal and I'm sitting down with somebody, what I'm doing is I'm missing out on an opportunity to really connect with somebody and replacing that with, again, a shallow version of communication via text or email with somebody else. And so, my conclusion would be that social media and digital communication are blessings in their own way. But they cannot accomplish what genuine in-person interaction can accomplish. And when we try to substitute the counterfeit for the real, then we'll suffer for that. And we'll be the ones missing out on a full or a more full life. Okay, I'm 3 minutes ahead. I'm just astounded. I can't believe this is really happening to me. So let's talk about what we do. And I'm glad because probably more time should be spent talking about the solution than about the problem. But let's talk about the solution. So I've said here that social media is not real life. I've heard that. I hear people say that from time to time. It's really great. Twitter is not real life. You know, all these people upset on Twitter. Twitter's not real life. Okay. And that's a nice way of making the point that social media is a flattened distortion form of reality. But the truth is, social media is real life. In the sense that we are real people and we are interacting with other real people, even though we're interacting with them via a digital medium. That's another example from the book I mentioned, that we use our thumbs and our fingers to insult and shame and ridicule and denigrate real flesh and blood humans made in God's image that are on the other side of the screen that we're typing into. And it's real life also because the damage that is done on social media and via email and text, the damage is real. The words hurt just as much. Not only, we mentioned experiencing the hurt ourselves as we feel lonely and isolated, other people that we're doing that to as well feel that, and that's real. And it's real life in the sense that I'm really going to be held accountable for what I do and what I say on social media. If Jesus said this is one of the scariest passages in the Gospels, every idle word of mine will be brought into judgment by God. Wow. What about every text message, every email? Every Facebook comment, every Instagram post. So yeah, it's not real life in the sense that we've talked about, but the consequences are real. And so let's talk about what to do and how to guide ourselves on social media. Okay, you can open your Bibles now. I feel bad that we've spent 34 minutes here and haven't asked you to open your Bible. I'm going to show it to you on the screen, but I think seeing it in front of you will be helpful as well. Philippians chapter 2. I love this passage in the context of what we're talking about. I think it fits really nicely with the theme of our weekend and talking about being disciples of Jesus. That's what this passage is about here. This summary of the gospel and this call to imitate Jesus of Paul in Philippians chapter 2. Read with me here. Philippians chapter 2, starting in verse 3. Paul says, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant, and being made in the likeness of men, being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. And I'll continue reading to the conclusion of Paul's thought. For this reason also, God highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name which is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus every knee will bow, of those who are in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and that every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. A couple things that we want to say about this passage here. This is, again, this is the story of the gospel, in essence, here in Philippians chapter 2. And the story of the Bible is a story about restoring connection, is it not? God made man and woman to dwell with them in perfect connection, to have that perfect fellowship, God and man. But also in the beginning, man with his fellow humans, man and woman in the beginning, but we could say humans had that perfect connection and fellowship in the beginning. But of course, sin broke all those lines of connection. Sin separated us from God, and sin broke the relationship between humans. You see that in Genesis 3 with the distrust and the blame immediately between man and woman. So human relationships are now broken. Man's relationship with God is broken because of sin. But God's plan all along was to reestablish that connection, to restore that relationship. And how did God do that? How is it that God restored the relationship that he was seeking with man? I'll tell you this. He didn't send an email with a PDF attachment, okay? He didn't FaceTime us, right? Give a video call of what was going on in heaven and what he wanted to do. He didn't even send a hologram. He thought, well, maybe even a hologram could have worked, right? An apparition. In fact, some of the earliest heresies were that very thing, right? That it wasn't really God in the flesh. It was like a spirit or a vision or something, you know. No, to solve this problem of broken relationship, God came in the flesh. He came in person, we might say, in the person of Jesus Christ, and took on flesh and blood himself in Jesus of Nazareth. By the way, I hope we appreciate that was much harder to do. Ben alluded to this last night. I mean, for God to take on flesh and blood, for God to become man, and to live in the mess of human experience, to deal with people. I mean, people are people, you know. To deal with the mess of humanity, to face pain, to face discomfort, to face ultimately suffering and death, as Paul points out here in Philippians 2. It was the much harder way. But it was the only way that he could achieve true reconciliation, coming to us, coming in the flesh, in the person of Jesus. The incarnation, central as it is to our faith and to the gospel, the incarnation shows us that there is tremendous power in flesh and blood presence. There's a spiritual power, we might say, in flesh and blood presence. So much so that it was the only way for God to restore connection to humanity. So think about that in the context of social media. This principle of God coming in the flesh. We cannot allow ourselves to simply become avatars, as we've said. We can't allow ourselves to be fooled into thinking that living in these virtual worlds of social media platforms is the same thing as living in the real world, quote unquote. Instead, we as disciples of Jesus, God in the flesh, need to take advantage, to harness the power of flesh and blood in person presence, and use that power to love people, to serve people, to connect with people, to bless people in little miniature ways of the way that Jesus did that for us by coming in the flesh to serve, to sacrifice, to give himself as a ransom for many. So that's the first thing I want to take away from Philippians 2 and how it instructs us in our use of social media. It shows us that the power, the real power, is in flesh and blood presence. That's where the power for relationship and connection really lies. Okay, if I'm being honest, I would say my dream would be that we walk out of here and everybody in this room comes up to me and says, "I'm done, I'm cutting the cord, I'm off social media altogether." That would just make my day, right? Be the happiest person alive. I know that's not going to happen. And as we said, there are blessings that come with social media that many of us will want to try to take advantage of while avoiding the dangers that come along with it. And so here's what I would say, drawing from Philippians 2 in that case, that the disciple of Jesus imitates Jesus all the time, right? The disciple of Jesus takes on the character of Jesus in everything they do, even online, even in email, even in text message, even on Facebook. Disciples imitate the master. As Ben said, we become like the master. And so think about the language of Paul here. What might it look like on social media to post nothing from selfishness or empty conceit? Think about that. What if that was my policy on social media? I'm not going to post anything from selfishness or empty conceit. It's not about me. What might it look like to not merely look out for my own personal interest? Not use social media simply to get out of it what I want to get out of it. And instead, what would it look like for on social media and for my social media activity to always count others as more important than myself and to look out for the interests of others? What would that look like? I think this is really worth reflecting on and thinking about for each of us individually in our own situation, because we're all going to use different platforms to different extents. How can I use it? One, not for selfishness and empty conceit, but two, to bless others, to serve others, for the interests of others. I'm sure many of you do this sort of thing, in a gathering like this, especially like in the Sunday assembly, right? You ever do this sort of thing where you come in or you stand up after the closing prayer and you look around and you think, who's in here that needs someone to talk to? Who's in here that I can be an encouragement to? Who can I go find and talk to that I can be a blessing to them? I hope you think in that sort of way. I hope we all think in that sort of way. What if you applied that kind of thinking to, you know, being on Facebook or being on Instagram and actually get on and with someone in mind and say, you know, is there someone that I know is struggling? Someone I know that is hurting. And I'm going to, you know, it's hard for me to connect with them in person. Maybe they live in a different place, or maybe that's just the circumstances aren't there to connect in person. So I'm going to go find them on social media. I'm going to seek them out. And I'm going to try to encourage them in some way. Okay? That's one example of a shift in a mindset to say, I'm using social media for the interests of others, to be a blessing to others, not for, again, selfishness and empty conceit. So Philippians 2, to me, is just incredibly helpful for thinking about where the real power lies in the relationships we have with others, and even in giving us some very, very poignant and important guidelines for using social media in a way that imitates Jesus. So here would be some closing recommendations based on what we've said. I will say, if you need to get off, get off. If you're in some of the other sessions, we'll talk some more about this sort of thing, making these sacrifices or setting these limits. Get off altogether, get off of a certain platform, get off for a time, whatever it is. We each need to be honest with ourselves and know what it is that is, again, the most wise and profitable thing. And if I need to get off, then I need to get off. I need to do that. My second recommendation would be to prioritize the people near me. And I mentioned this earlier. In our lives, we are so closely connected to so many people already. Our immediate family, our broader kind of blood family, our church family, our neighbors that we like live within feet of, you know, but never talk to. We have so many people that are close to us in our life. Let's prioritize those people. Okay. Let's make that the focus of our attention and our service and our love. The people that we are in flesh and blood presence with, let's make them to the priority in our lives. And I would say use social media and digital communication to move towards physical connection. So use Facebook, for instance, to advertise a gathering for all the church family in person, right? Use social media to get people together in flesh and blood ways, or the people that you are constantly in a, you know, text chat with, or somebody you've connected with online, meet up with them for coffee, take a trip with them. Move that relationship as much as possible from the virtual to the in-person or the flesh and blood. And then, as it pertains to actually posting content online, stop. A lot of problems probably could be solved with just the stop. Just stop. Okay? Stop and wait. Give it 30 seconds. Give it 30 minutes. Give it a day. We'll talk about why we don't want to do that later on. But we'd be much wiser to just stop. Wait, give it some time, let the email sit in your draft folder. Gmail is great because it automatically saves it as a draft. Type the whole thing out and just wait. Don't send it. Sit on it, pray about it, sleep on it. Ask some important questions. Why am I posting this? What's the motivation for posting it? All the same things that we get told when we're a kid. Is it true? Is it helpful? You know. Ask, why am I doing this? Ask what the outcome will be. We don't always know what the outcome will be. And I don't mean to say that, you know, someone being offended is the standard. I mean, Ben said last night, Jesus said some pretty offensive things. It's not really what I mean. But I mean, just ask, what's going to happen? Let's play this out, okay? Is this going to be helpful to the church family? Is this going to be profitable to other people? Ask some of those important questions while you're stopping and you're waiting. But in that discussion, last thing here, in 1 Corinthians 10, where we started, where Paul said, in the context of eating meat sacrificed to idols, all things are lawful, sure, but not all things are profitable. All things may be lawful, but not all things edify. Here's how Paul wrapped up that discussion at the end of 1 Corinthians 10. Whether then, he said, whether you tweet or snap, whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense, he says, to Jews or Greeks, to black or to white, or to the church of God, so that as I please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, so that the many may be saved. Here it is. Be imitators, Paul says, of me, just as I also am of Christ. We all have our own decisions to make. It will not look the same for all of us leaving this room. I simply ask you to be honest about what is the wisest, most profitable course of action, and to prioritize building other people up in imitation of Jesus, all to the glory of God. Thank you so much for being here, for your time and your attention.
Luke chapter 4. Do what? Oh, thanks. My brother's helping me out. You can see that I'm lost, and so he's helping. Very on theme. Luke chapter 4. Thanks, man. We're gonna talk about following Jesus to the lost, and we're just going to use two texts and talk about concepts that come from this. It's going to be pretty simple. We're just going to go with it that way. In just a second, I'm going to pray to start us off, and I'd like to ask a question to get ourselves going. I know we're in the room where nobody's supposed to talk. I don't know what the rules are in this church, but there's secret rules in some churches where you're not allowed to talk when you sit down in one of the padded seats. But that's not the rule today, and I'd really appreciate it if we could have some engagement with each other and talk about these things as we think about how to follow Jesus to the lost. And I know it's probably a pretty much the question that we always ask when it comes to evangelism and preaching and teaching, but the question I like to talk about is, what do you find most challenging, or what do you think most Christians find most challenging about actually doing the work that Jesus did and what he gave us to do, and that is to reach our friends with the good news of his lordship and his salvation. So that's what I want us to talk about is, what do you find challenging about this? We'll talk about that for 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll dive into our text and see what concepts we can learn. Before we do that, let's pray together. Our Father in heaven, we praise you for loving us and saving us and for entrusting us with